हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 17, The Lord Travels to Vrindavan. Page 23, 217, 147, 149. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started from Mathura, all three devotees started to go with him. But the Lord forbade them to accompany him, and from a distance he asked them to return home. Feeling separation from the Lord, the three used to meet and glorify the holy qualities of the Lord. Thus they were absorbed in ecstatic love. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then went to Prayag, where he bathed at the confluence of the Ganges and the Jamuna. He then visited the temple of Venu Madhava and chanted and danced there in ecstatic love. No, it's Allahabad that I'm thinking on the other side of the river from Dasrameda is Venu Madhava. In Kashi, I don't know what's there. Yeah, because before I was saying about that one temple, yeah. But that I think I was mixing it up with Prayag. Srila Prabhupada, the city of Prayag is situated a few miles from the city of Allahabad. The name Prayag is given due to successful sacrifices performed there. What's happening? Yeah. It is said, Prakristo yago yaga phalam yasmat. If one performs sacrifices at Prayag, he certainly gets immediate results without difficulty. Prayag is also called Tirtharaj, the king of all places of pilgrimage. This holy place is situated on the confluence of the rivers Ganges and Jamuna. Every year, a fair takes place there known as Magh Mela. And every 12 years, a Kumbh Mela is also held. In any case, many people come to bathe there every year. During Magh Mela, people from the local district generally come. And during Kumbh Mela, people from all over India, all live there and bathe in the Ganges and Jamuna. Yeah, because they spend some time. Yes. So I think that the full time is 41 days.
Yes.
Like that. Yes.
So they also call the place Triveni.
Triveni, yes.
Because they said three rivers flow there.
Yes.
And Saraswati is one.
Yes.
So Saraswati flows west side.
Well, she comes underneath.
Yes.
There. So you don't see her. You only see Ganga and Jamuna coming in.
Yes.
But at the place where they meet, Saraswati also comes up from underneath.
One west side. Saraswati flow towards Gujarat and India.
Oh, okay. So she just...
Meridian Sea.
Oh, underneath. Keeps going.
It used to be, then it dried up.
Yeah. But I think it still flows, but it's just, you don't see it. It's somehow or another under. Because she used to flow into the ocean.
Yes.
But then she reversed and was flowing inland. And then, now you don't see her.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Rig Veda is mentioning these things about how it. But at that point where everybody goes for that bath, then she comes up there. She's also present there. But you see is Ganga and Jamuna. They're the two you see at that point.
Different color.
Different color. Oh, okay. Okay. So one side is one color, the other side. Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
In 2001, I was there for the full 41 days. The main day was 20 billion people. 20 million people.
20 million?
Yes.
Bathing in one day?
Yes, with the police.
No social distancing.
No coronavirus. It was
No, I'm just so joking. I think there's a saying, I think in Tamil about there's so many people that if you threw a handful of sesame seeds in the air, none of them would hit the ground. So that's crowded. Whoever goes there immediately feels the place's spiritual influence. A fort located there was constructed by the Emperor Akbar about 500 years ago. And near the fort is a place called Triveni. On the other side of Prayag is an old place known as Pratishthanapura. It is also well known as Junsi. Many saintly people live there, and consequently it is very attractive from the spiritual point of view. Maybe. I don't know, because it's down, it says not further. Here it says Junsi, how it is, but I thought that was Jansi, but that could be how it's...
No, it's Junsi.
There's
one
railway
station also, Junsi.
Junsi, okay. But where Prabhupada was...
That was Jansi.
Jansi, that's a different place, because that's in Madhya Pradesh, no?
No, UP.
It's in UP?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's near Kanpur
Maharaj. Oh, it's up that side?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. 217, 150, 155. As soon as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the river Jamuna, he threw himself into it. Ballabha Bhattacharya hastily caught the Lord and very carefully raised him up again. The Lord stayed at Prayag for 3 days. He delivered the holy name of Krishna in ecstatic love. Thus he delivered many people. Whenever the Lord stopped to rest on the way to Mathura, he delivered the holy name of Krishna in ecstatic love of Krishna. Thus he made the people dance. When the Lord toured South India, he delivered many people. And when he traveled in the western sector, he similarly converted many people to Vaishnavism. While the Lord was going to Mathura, he came across the river Jamuna several times. And as soon as he saw the river Jamuna, he would immediately jump in, falling unconscious in the water in the ecstasy of love of Krishna. When he approached Mathura and saw the city, he immediately fell to the ground and offered obeisances with great ecstatic love. Verses 156 to 234. Mathura and the 12 forests of Vrindavan. 217, 156. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered the city of Mathura, he took his bath at Vishramagat. He then visited the birthplace of Krishna and saw the deity named Keshavji. He offered his respectful obeisances to this deity. Srila Prabhupada. Oops. There you go. At the present moment, the temple of Keshavji is very much improved. At one time, Keshavji Mandir was attacked by the Emperor Aurangzeb, who constructed such a big mosque there that the temple of Keshavji was insignificant in comparison. But with the help of many rich Marwaris, the temple has been improved, and a very large temple is now being constructed, so that the mosque is now appearing diminished in comparison. Many archaeological discoveries have been made there, and many people from foreign countries are beginning to appreciate Krishna's birthplace. This Krishna consciousness movement is attracting many foreigners to the Keshavji temple, and now they will be attracted by the Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan. 217, 157 to 179. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chanted, danced, and made loud vibrations, all the people were astonished to see his ecstatic love. One Brahmana fell at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and then began to dance with him in ecstatic love. The two of them danced in ecstatic love and embraced each other. Raising their arms, they said, "Chant the holy names of Hari and Krishna." All the people then began to chant Hari, Hari, and there was a great uproar. The priest in Lord Keshava's service offered Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu a garland. When the people saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dancing and chanting, they were struck with wonder, and they all said, "Such a transcendental love is never an ordinary thing." The people said, "Simply by seeing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, everyone is maddened with love of Krishna. Indeed, everyone is laughing, crying, dancing, chanting, and taking the holy name of Krishna." Certainly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, in all respects, the incarnation of Lord Krishna. Now he has come to Mathura to deliver everyone. After this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the Brahman aside. Sitting in a solitary place, the Lord began to question him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "You are an elderly Brahman. You are sincere and you are advanced in spiritual life. Wherefrom have you gotten this transcendental opulence of ecstatic love for Krishna?" The Brahman replied, His Holiness Srila Madhavendra Puri came to the city of Mathura while he was on tour. While at Mathura, Sripad Madhavendra Puri visited my house and accepted me as a disciple. He even took lunch at my home. After installing the deity of Gopal, Srila Madhavendra Puri rendered him service. That very deity is still being worshipped at Govardhan Hill. As soon as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard about Madhavendra Puri's relationship with the Brahmana, he immediately offered obeisances at his feet. Becoming fearful, the Brahmana also immediately fell at the Lord's feet. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "You are on the platform of my spiritual master, and I am your disciple. Since you are my spiritual master, it is not befitting that you offer me obeisances." Upon hearing this, the Brahmana became afraid. He then said, "Why do you speak like this? You are a sannyasi. Upon seeing your ecstatic love, I can just imagine that you must have some relationship with Madhavendra Puri. This is my understanding. This kind of ecstatic love can be experienced only when one has a relationship with Madhavendra Puri. Without him, even a scent of such transcendental ecstatic love is impossible." Balabhadra Bhattacharya then explained the relationship between Madhavendra Puri and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. After hearing this, the Brahman became very pleased and began to dance. The Brahman then took Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his home and, out of his own free will, began to serve the Lord in various ways. He asked Balabhadra Bhattacharya to cook Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lunch. At that time, the Lord, smiling, spoke as follows. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Madhavendra Puri has already taken lunch at your place. Therefore, you may cook and give me the food. That is my instruction." Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow, and whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Footnote 7. This is a quotation from the Bhagavad Gita 3.21. The Brahman belonged to the Sanodiya Brahman community, and a sannyasi does not accept food from such a brahmana. Srila Prabhupada. In northwest India, Vaishyas are divided into various subdivisions. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that they are divided as Agarwala, Kalawara, and Sunwara. Out of them, the Agarwalas are said to be first-class Vaishyas, and the Kalawaras and Sunwaras are considered lower due to their occupational degradation. The Kalawaras generally take wine and other intoxicants. Although they are Vaishyas, they are considered to belong to a lower class. The priests who guide the Kalawaras and the Sunwaras are called Sanodiya Brahmanas. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that the word Sanodara in Bengal indicates Suvarnabhanic. In Bengal, there are priests who guide the Suvarnabhanic community, which is also considered a low class. There is little difference between the Sunwaras and the Suvarnabhanics. Generally, the Suvarnabhanics are bankers dealing in gold and silver. In western India, the Agarwals also belong to the banking profession. This is the original business of the Suvarnabhanic or Agarwal community. Historically, the Agarwalas came from the upcountry named Ayodhya, and the Suvarnabhanic community also came from Ayodhya. It therefore appears that the Suvarnabhanics and the Agarwalas belong to the same community. The Sanodiya Brahmins were the guides of the Kalawaras and Sunwaras. They are therefore considered to be lower class brahmanas, and a sannyasi is not allowed to take alms or food from them. However, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted lunch cooked by a Sanodiya Brahmin simply because he belonged to Madhavendra Puri's community. Srila Madhavendra Puri was the spiritual master of Ishwara Puri, who was the spiritual master of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Thus, a spiritual relationship is established on the spiritual platform without consideration of material inferiority or superiority. Those are just for the economic scene and that you get involved. But if someone becomes a devotee, these things don't apply anymore. Right? Yes, when they're going to do business and this and that, they're going to move in the community that is appropriate. They're going to take their position as appropriate. But as far as the ashram side and the association between devotees and that has no bearing. But that's the difference in Daiva Varna ashram, is that the Varna, then you fit in where you fit in. But for ashram, then everybody's devotee. So that's where everyone's a devotee, not on the other side. Sorry? Yes, yes. Yeah. But here they're considered to be that they're the of the three in Northwest, they're the better of them. And then the Suvarnabhanics, like that. So depending on where you are, someone will consider something higher or lower. Like we saw before, that Krishnas Kaviraj was explaining that in a particular part of India, Brahmins are Brahmins, everybody else is called Shudras, even their Kshatriyas, Vaishyas. It's just there's Brahmins and there's everybody else. You know? So, you know, depending on where it is, then, you know, these things happen. 217? Yes.
They are bankers, huh?
Yes.
So they are considered the low-class Vaishya.
Bankers aren't considered higher grade. Nowadays they're considered very respectable and all that, but previously they were not. Because, see, is that banking is business, right? So now if the bank is keeping your money and taking interest from you for loans, or by keeping your money, they're giving you an interest, either way they're making money. So you're thinking, oh, I'm getting 5% or something like that. How much are they getting? You know? It's just they're giving that much just so that you don't complain. They could be making 40% off of your money. You know what I'm saying? Because they use the money to loan out to others. It means loan is 20%, they take your money, loan it to someone else and get that 20%. That's the fun part. You could be loaning the money and get the 20%. And no, they're doing it. So it's not considered very cultured, because there's always people can't pay, this, that, and then they're always forcing. Banks come in, they have repo men. You have those? Repo? Repossession? Really, really tough, couldn't care less kind of guys that, you know, it comes up, you know, you haven't paid the things on your car. They just come along and pack your car up and walk off. You can be yelling, screaming, dragging on, you know, holding on to the ankle. They couldn't care less. So, you know, they themselves present themselves as very cultured, but, you know, the business is cutthroat as that. So, therefore, trade is better than that, because at least you have a chance, you can bargain with them. You know, and you know, there's so many, you like this, you go to that one. But the best is considered the farming and dairy. Yes?
Also for the banking, it's like they make money out of one's need, and people are in need.
That's when they need.
Yeah. Making money out of you. Culturally, if you're you are supposed to get treated from somebody.
Yeah. So they're taking advantage of your need. Yeah. Well, now you see even in other fields,
medicine.
Medicine and those, because you need that. Anything you need, they charge more for. When it used to be that things that people actually require were less. And luxury things, that's where you made money. But now they figure out people need this. They must pay for that. So they charge you. You know, you have some special medicine you have to take, they charge you extra. Even though it doesn't cost any more than aspirin to make. You know, some chemicals, what does it take to make it? You know, they're all becoming, going down. But otherwise the bankers were considered the lower, like that. Like even in the West, in Europe, they wouldn't. Christians wouldn't allow. A Christian could not be a banker. Like that, it was against the rules. Yes.
But Muslims are even stricter. in Muslims it's even strict, like, no?
Oh, they don't allow.
And then the girl is not supposed to be, nobody's supposed to get married to a banker.
No one marries the banker. Yeah. Is that because bankers tend to be a little bit more formal and dry or something? Or? So no girl wants to marry? No?
Recently also. Middle East countries...
They're really strict about that, yeah. And then there's a particular group that's quite clever and all that, and they take advantage of this and they make all the money. You know, so somebody's got to do it, right? You know, so.
They also don't marry their girls to
those places. Huh? Yes, and the Muslims don't marry their girls to those bankers either.
And vice versa.
Nor the Christians, yeah, nor vice versa. Yeah. So, yeah. So it's just a particular mentality, so it's not recommended. You know, but, you know, it's bona fide. You know, it's a bona fide occupation. It's just considered on the social, because if you're looking at the spiritual thing, then it's not considered so good. Like that. That's all. 217, 180, 183. So that's why that is for the devotional community, then these things aren't that important. Although the Brahmana belonged to the Sarnodiya community, Srila Madhavendra Puri had seen that he behaved like a Vaishnava and had therefore accepted him as his disciple. The food he had cooked had also been accepted by Madhavendra Puri. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu willingly requested food from the Brahmana. And the Brahmana, feeling natural humility, began to speak as follows. It is a great fortune for me to offer you food. You are the Supreme Lord, and being in the transcendental position, you are not restricted in any way. Foolish people will blaspheme you, but I shall not tolerate the words of such mischievous people. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur remarks that although the Brahmanas did not belong to a superior community, he fearlessly chastised so-called caste Brahmas because he was situated on the platform of pure devotional service. There are people who are opposed to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's accepting a Vaishnava belonging to a lower caste. Such people do not consider Mahaprasadam transcendental, and therefore they are described here as murka, foolish, and dushta, mischievous. A pure devotee has the power to challenge such high caste people, and his brave statements are not to be considered proud or puffed up. On the contrary, he is to be considered straightforward. Such a person does not like to flatter high class Brahmins who belong to the non-Vaishnav community. So you see, is that Vaishnavs aren't fascinated with others, you know, social status, you know, success, knowledge, skills, all these things. It's just they speak as it is, because these things are, you know, they're nice things, but the problem is that since human life is meant for realizing God and our relationship, therefore, if you're not doing that, you know, and you're just being successful in the material world, that's not that great of a thing. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it'd be like, let's say you're in a prison and somebody somehow or another decked out his cell really nicely. You know, or he, you know, his uniform is ironed. You know, or something like that. You know, others, whoa, check this guy out, you know? But the point is what does it matter? You're in prison. So it's about the behavior, not about these things. 217.184. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "The Vedas, Puranas, and great learned sages are not always in agreement with one another. Consequently, there are different religious principles." Srila Prabhupada. Unless one comes to the absolute truth, there is no possibility of agreement. Nashav Rishir Yasya Matam Na Bhinnam. It is said that a great learned scholar or sage cannot be exalted unless he disagrees with the other scholars and sages. Right? So on the material platform, that's how it works. You're great because you disagree with others and you propound your own theory and say the others are wrong and like this. Then you get attention. Like that. You know, it's just the way it works. Are you saying? You know, it's like I, again, I say, yeah. On the material platform, there is no possibility of agreement, right? Because you're dealing with details. You're working at the lowest level. Here is considered a high level, but from the spiritual point of view, you're working on the lowest level. You're taking details of philosophy, right? And then arguing over words or syllables or etymology or these kind of different things. And so because of that, then there's going to be always disagreement, because the shastras are giving different angles, and that depending upon what they're talking about, and then they'll take something of that and try to interpret it in their own way. So that's the difficulty with detail, is that on detail there can be so much argument, but on principle, where's the argument? You can not like the principle, but you can't actually argue about it. With that. So therefore, on the scholars, they'll always, because they're dealing with detail. You know, is it in strings, or is it in, you know, how you say it? What's the other one? Individual without string, the string theory, and what's the other one? Then now they're into dark matter, stuff like that. It's in quantum physics. Then there's different groups. You know, even though they're working in the same field, they do not get along. You know, they're like different castes. If someone's working in one area, they won't associate with anybody from the other area. You know, they so much disagree with each other and stuff like that. And they're working in the same discipline.
What happened with the beer?
Yeah, if you get onto that platform, then you're going to always, that's what's going to happen.
It is there.
Like that, because it's just a matter of, if it's about, you know, the principles that are there, where's the problem? But if you get down to the detail, you know, then it's, yes. On the material platform, there is no possibility of agreement. Therefore, there are different kinds of religious systems. But the absolute truth is one, and when one is situated in the absolute truth, there is no disagreement. On that absolute platform, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipable. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 18:55, Bhaktiyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. On the absolute platform, the worshipable deity is one, and the process of worship is also one. That process is bhakti. There are many religions throughout the world because they are not all on the absolute platform of devotional service. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 18:66. Sarva dharmam parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja. The word ekam means one. Krishna on this platform. Krishna. On this platform there are no different religious systems. According to Srimad Bhagavatam 1:12, dharmam projita kaitavotra. On the material platform, religious systems are different. Srimad Bhagavatam describes them from the very beginning as dharma kaitava, cheating religions. None of these religions is actually genuine. That means the genuine religious system is that which enables one to become a lover of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? That's how you judge. Because religion means the inherent nature of something. And that inherent nature means the laws of God. Right? So then religion is going to be there because people accept certain aspects of laws of God. So even the scientists, it's a religion, because they accept certain laws and they work by that. But then the problem is because they're on the material platform, they'll focus on some laws, some on the other laws, but not on the lawmaker, not on developing a relationship with the lawmaker, not on developing love for the lawmaker. And that not in developing in love for them, so then it's a personal relationship. So that's the difficulties, all the varieties, you know, means that which we call religions, but basically everything else is also working on. People just make it up, you know, that you have to do this and that, and you know, why do they have to do that? You know, this is, you know, how you say, you know, the bailiff all rise, you know, when the judge walks in and that, and then they all that, and then he when he sits and they sit. It's a religious process. So that's the whole thing. They've created that. These are laws. You have to follow this. This is their morality. But does it end in developing love for God? No. So these will just be social sensual. You know, there may be some acceptance of the Lord, and then there's some acceptance of some law. But in general, it's they're following these laws not to develop love for God. So even in Kate Karma Mimamsa, they're following very nicely all the religious principles. But for what purpose? Simply to go to the heavenly planet. Nothing to do with God. You know, it means God's the law maker, so yeah, you follow the laws because then you get the result. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so that's all. It's not that they care for the people making, you know, if you say, Black Friday, then, you know, the store's going to open at 6 in the morning. So you're there, you know, for that time. Not that you care about the people who run the store and their laws and this and that. It's just you want what's in that shop at that time. So therefore you follow that rule. You know, if you come at 10 o'clock, there's going to be nothing. So you show up at that time. You know, so that's the point is that God's just part of their morality. He's not the central point. So we see it in Vastutraya, then Krishna is the central feature of all relationships. So whatever relationship you have, Krishna is the center. So that's the point that we're saying. We're not saying that they're not proper religions. But the point is the actual purpose of a religious system is to develop love for God. So if they're not to that degree that's going on, then you can say that's genuine. And to that degree it's not, that's a problem. You know? And people can't complain going, yeah, we always knew these religions were this. They're worse. You know, they don't even care about the laws. So their religious system is just do whatever you feel like. Is it? Is it do what you want to do, be what you want to be, go wherever you know? That isn't that? Yeah. So that's their religious system, and so you know they're worse. At least the others are trying to regulate their life and all this. And yes, people make mistakes. There's problems and all that, but that doesn't. But the point is once you add developing love for the absolute, that's when you can cross these things very easily. Otherwise, it's difficult. It's difficult.
Krishna explains this to Uddhava. The instruction, the Lord gives this morning in the 11th temple.
Ah, okay.
You explain to him, he says, I did teach the Brahma, he did teach the Brahma, and he did teach the Shiva, and the progenitors, and then they started preaching to the demigod, and the demons, and they all started their own religious process. But nothing of this is about me.
Yeah.
It's all lost.
Yeah, because as we said, religion is the inherent nature of something. You find, like we're studying about theater. It has that's its religion. It has to run like that. You do like that, it'll work. You don't do like that, it does not work. You know, it doesn't matter what they do. They don't run according to those rules. You'll see it doesn't do well. You know, they're thinking, oh, you have to do this and express this and all that. And then you have others that just show a hero going through trouble and then being successful. And everybody likes it. You know, or the thing where boy and girl get together at the end. You know, there's trouble, but they get together. Everyone likes it. You know, the critics, they just pan it and say it's terrible, disgusting, same old trope, same old this, same old that. But at the same time, as in the box office, everyone loved it. Because it follows the rules. Right? So that's the whole point, is that everything has its religion. But the point is all that is part of one religion of developing love for Krishna. So then this one thing, then others have taken it, and as you know, was it Krishna was telling Uddhava, yeah, in the 11th canto, that then they take it and make their own religious, that they take just this part out of it. You know, it's like, now I like this part of Krishna consciousness. I like that part. This part I don't like. You know, and so then they're making their own process. So that's why we just follow in the footsteps of the acharyas. Because who are we? We make mistakes. So we may be accepting a part that's secondary as primary, and a primary part is secondary. You know, it's just.
But the phenomenon, Maharaj, now is that because people have been so cheated and disappointed by religion. The word religion is a taboo term. Religion means brainwash, means being, subjugated, exploited.
You mean the corporate world?
Yeah, No,
I'm just saying. You're talking about corporate, right?
Cool. Secret.
Yeah, they come in, they take over, get the monopoly, take everything, squeeze all the money out and everything, and completely.
So now they switch to spiritual.
Spiritual. Okay, so now you don't.
We want religion, we want to be spiritual.
Spiritual. That's interesting.
You can't use the word religion. So.
But they don't know what it means.
No, they don't know what it means.
Okay, that's interesting. Spiritual. So then we could use transcendental. That sounds even more far out, It's like spiritual, come on. We're transcendental. And which is true, because religious will be karma, spiritual will be gyan, but transcendental will be bhakti.
So they say, I prefer yoga, because yoga means religion.
Yeah, because they don't know what they're talking about. It means anything, just that they do their own, what they consider, that they say, no, what is this? Now there is Black Lives Matter. That's a religious element. That you're saying this moral principle is important, we should follow that. And so it becomes, and so you put all those, string those together, and that becomes one kind of religion. Another, some agree with that one point, but not with anything else. That's interesting. Spiritual now.
We give these Bhagavad Gita classes online to people who don't even know what it is.
Right.
And we always have questions. So, is bhakti a religion? In other words, is it like Islam and Christianity and Buddhism? Straight away they think, is it a religion? In other words, do I have to bow down? Do I have to follow,
So that means their family life is a religion.
Yeah.
If it's based on bow down and giving away your money. No?
So everybody should be sannyasi.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid of that.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's the war of terminology.
Yeah, well, that's what we were discussing this morning. It's the lowest of them, etymology.
Yeah.
It's the lowest of the forms of authority. It means direct understanding is the first. Yeah. Well, that's what all political correctness is. It's just fighting over words.
Yeah.
Interesting. So they're creating a new religion.
Yeah.
Without parampara, without sampradaya, it's always a creation of something.
Yes, means without the parampara, like you said, Madhavendapuri and that.
Yes.
Then without parampara, you will make it up because living entities must follow religion. There's no question, but it's either you follow what's given in the scriptures or you'll make it up.
Yes.
You have that choice.
In one sense, all the religion.
So all it is some are organized and some are not.
Yes. Yes.
Or some is just popular by usage.
Yes. Yes.
So that's the thing, is that it's there at all levels. It means all the five levels that you follow the laws that govern it, that's a religious process. So it's just now they're quoting more pranamoy and anamoy.
Yes.
They don't like the more organized where you're accepting some regulation in the life. That's what they're worried about, is regulation. Can I do whatever I want? That's what Prabhupada was saying about these. Because this thing is they're figuring it out now, in the West and all this, things like that. But when the Indian yogis and that went over to America in the 60s and 70s, they figured it out immediately. That no one wants to follow any regulations. So they would just talk spiritual with no regulation, and they were super popular. I mean, it's with the guy with the frizzy hair, I think he had 50 million followers. I didn't say it.
And 50 million followers, that's before Facebook and Instagram. It's real.
Yeah. That was real people. Yeah, so because there is, that's the whole point is, religion means it regulates your life. And their life is regulated, but they don't recognize how it's regulated. You know? It means it's just like, when do they eat? You know, it has the time. You can only eat in the morning and at night. In the day, you can get some kind of snack or this or that, you know, because you work at the office. You know, and so like that. So when you go to bed, you know, after that, then you stay up, you watch movies, this, that, you know, eat something, drink, then go to bed, then you get up as late as possible, then just, you know, I say, you know, drink your cup of coffee, rush off to the office again. And so it's also known as the religion of the rat race. You know, like that. So, or the rut. You know, the sadhana is the rut. And so then, it's all going on. So people just take what aspects of the whole religious system that Krishna's given, you know, from Manu. That means so many rules are there, and some people like certain ones, and some people don't like other ones. And so they just take those, or they make up their own derivatives and all that. You know, it's just like in the market. You have that real commodity, and then you have the derivatives, and you have this, and you have stuff that doesn't even exist. You know? No? Yeah. So it's like that. They just... So that's interesting. Only spiritual. Because spiritual means it has nothing. It's again, void. It's impersonal. You know? So it has, because if it's impersonal, it has no regulations. In the words of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6, Savai Pumso Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Ad Hoksaje Ahaitu Kyaparti Hata Yayatma Srupasiddhati. The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendental Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. Right? So anything else won't satisfy the self, so people will start going further in that, or especially in nowadays, because everything's more instant, so if it doesn't get immediate, they'll move on to the next, keep trying until trying to find something. You know, like that. Because they can't satisfy the self. So this then defines what's the genuine aspect. This is the genuine aspect of religion. So if you're attaining that, then it's fine. And if you're not, you know, just like someone may be more situated in varnashram, someone more in scholarship, someone more in charity, someone more in austerity, so like this. So Prahlad Maharaj then talks about, I think, 12 or 18 different religious, you know, main religious activities. And so all these things people will consider. You know, it's just you organize that together, then you have, or if you don't organize it, then you know, you it's already there, you choose what you want. But the point is, if that doesn't result in love for Krishna, then it doesn't, it's not the purpose. Religion is to do that, because then the self will be satisfied. Because we can't be satisfied with material facilities, you know, or lack of them. You know, means in other words, you have full facility, or you have, you know, zero, or what, zero, right? Yeah. On this platform, there's nothing but the service of the Lord. When a person has no ulterior motive, there is certainly oneness and agreement of principles. Since everyone has a different body and mind, different types of religions are needed. But when one is situated on the spiritual platform, there are no bodily and mental differences. Consequently, on the absolute platform, there is oneness in religion. I guess you could explain it that we're interested in the absolute. And then those things that help assist understanding the absolute. being situated in the absolute. So you've said, you know, you've answered their question, and you've established that we're following that aspect of religion, because they don't know what religion means. 217-185. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "A devotee's behavior establishes the true purpose of religious principles. The behavior of Madhavendra Puri Goswami is the essence of such religious principles." Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the following comment on this passage. A sadhu or honest man is called Mahajana or Mahatma. The Mahatma is described thus by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 9.13. Mahatmanas tumam partha daivim prakritim ashrita. Bhajanti ananya manaso yatva bhutim yadva bhutadim avyayam. O son of Prita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. We could throw in this one, talk about divine nature. That one would, you'd get some mileage from that. In the material world, the word Mahatma is understood in different ways by different religionists. Mundaners also come up with their different angles of vision. For the conditioned soul busy in sense gratification, a Mahajana is recognized according to the proportion of sense gratification he offers. Right? For instance, a businessman may consider a certain banker to be a Mahajana, and karmis desiring material enjoyment may consider philosophers like Jaimini to be Mahajanas. There are many yogis who want to control the senses, and for them Patanjali Rishi is a Mahajana. For the jnanis, the atheist Kapila, Vishishta, Durvasa, Dattatreya, and other impersonalist philosophers are Mahajanas. For the demons, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, Ravana's son, Meghanada, Jarasandha, and others are accepted as Mahajanas. For materialistic anthropologists speculating on the evolution of the body, a person like Darwin is a Mahajana. The scientists who are bewildered by Krishna's external energy have no relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yet they are accepted by some as Mahajanas. Similarly, philosophers, historians, literary men, public speakers, and social and political leaders are sometimes accepted as Mahajanas. Such Mahajanas are respected by certain men who have been described in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.19. Svavid varahostra karai samstuta purusham pashuhu nayat karna pato peto jatu nama gada graja. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Krishna, the deliverer from evils. Right? So whatever is your value, then those people become, and those who's good at it, then they're Mahajanas. Like that. Thus, on the material platform, animalistic leaders are worshipped by animals. Sometimes physicians, psychiatrists, and social workers try to mitigate bodily pain, distress, and fear, but they have no knowledge of spiritual identity and are bereft of a relationship with God. Yet they are considered Mahajanas by the illusions. Self-deceived persons sometimes accept leaders or spiritual masters from a priestly order that has been officially appointed by the codes of material life. By the codes of material life. In this way, they are deceived by official priests. Sometimes people accept it as Mahajans, those who have been designated by Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur as Dunga Vipras, imposter Brahmins. Such imposters imitate the characteristics of Srila Haridas Thakur, and they envy Haridas Thakur, who is certainly a Mahajana. They make great artificial endeavors, advertising themselves as great devotees of the Lord or as mystic hypnotists, knowledgeable in witchcraft, hypnotism, and miracles. Sometimes people accept as Mahajans demons like Putana, Trinavarta, Vatsa, Baka, Arista, Agasura, Denuka, Kaliya, and Pralamba. Some people accept imitators and adversaries of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such as Pandurka, Shringala, Sringala Vasudeva, the spiritual master of the demons, Sukracharya, or atheists like Charvak, King Vena, Sugata, and Arhat. People who accept such imitators as Mahajans have no faith in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, they accept godless cheaters who present themselves as incarnations of God and cheat foolish people within the material world by word jugglery. Isn't it in China there's eight arhats, isn't there? Thus, many rascals are accepted as Mahajanas. It is those who are devoid of devotional service who sometimes mistakenly accept persons with mundane motives as Mahajanas. The only motive must be Krishna Bhakti, devotional service to the Lord. Sometimes fruit are workers, dry philosophers, non-devotees, mystic yogis, and persons attached to material opulence. Women and money are considered Mahajanas. But Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.3.25 gives the following statement about such unauthorized Mahajanas. Prayena Veda Tad Idam Na Mahajano Yam Devya Vimohita Matir Bata Maya Layam Maya Yalam Trayam Jari Krita Matir Madhu Pushpitayam Vai Tantike Mahati Karmani Yujamana. In this material world, karmis, fruit of actors, are accepted as Mahajans by foolish people who do not know the value of devotional service. The mundane intelligence and mental speculative methods of such foolish people are under the control of the three modes of material nature. Consequently, they cannot understand unalloyed devotional service. They are attracted by material activities, and they become worshippers of material nature. Thus, they are known as fruit of actors. They even become entangled in material activities disguised as spiritual activities. In the Bhagavad Gita, such people are described as Vedavadarata, supposed followers of the Vedas. They do not understand the real purport of the Vedas, yet they think of themselves as Vedic authorities. People versed in Vedic knowledge must know Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vedaischa sever aham eva vedyaha. Bhagavad Gita 15:15. In this material world, a person may be famous as a karma vira, a successful fruit of worker. Like you have that Forbes list? Fortune 500? Like that. So these are the Mahajanas in the economic world, right? Or he may be very successful in performing religious duties. Or he may be known as a hero in mental speculation, Jnanavirya. Or he may be very famous, renunciate. In any case, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.26.56 gives the following opinion in this matter. Neha yat karma dharmaya navyuragaya kalpate natirtapada sevayai jivan napi mrito hisa. Anyone whose work is not meant for elevating him to religious life, anyone whose religious ritualistic performances do not raise him to renunciation, and anyone situated in renunciation does not lead him to devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead must be considered dead, although he is breathing. Is this Kunti?
No, Devahuti.
Devahuti, okay. Yeah, no, it's very far out.
Kunti's first
cantor.
Sorry? Kunti's first
cantor. First, oh. Kunti's first cantor?
Yes.
Oh, somebody I never saw was third. That's Devahuti. Okay, okay.
Kunti is the first grace offered in Bhagavad.
Oh.
Then Bhishma,
okay. Okay. The conclusion is that all pious activity, fruitive activity, religious principles, and renunciation must ultimately lead to devotional service. Right, so that's our point. Devotional service is the sad-dharma. Then it has so many supportive aspects to it. But then people take the supportive and leave the sad-dharma. And then now you have all these are all connected to Sad-Dharma. That brings them all together. But now that you leave Sad-Dharma, they don't have that connection. to each other. And so now then you have all the different religious things based on the different modes and people's needs and everything like that. Yeah. There are different types of processes for rendering service. One may serve his country, people in society, the Varnashram Dharma system, the sick, the poor, the rich, women, demigods, and so on. All this service comes under the heading of sense gratification, or enjoyment in the material world. It is most unfortunate that people are more or less attracted by such material activity, and that the leaders of these activities are accepted as Mahajanas, great ideal leaders. Actually, they are only misleaders, but an ordinary man cannot understand how he is being misled. Narottam Das Thakur says, Sadhu Shastra Guru Vakya Chitete Kariya Aikya. One should accept as one's guide the words of the sadhus, the Shastra and the Guru. A sadhu is a great personality like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Shastras are the injunctions of revealed scriptures, and the Guru or spiritual master is one who confirms the scriptural injunctions. Right, so spiritual master means one who confirms them, not takes you away from them, like that. It means in Buddhism, that's okay, that takes you away. But right? Accepting the guidance of these three is the actual way of following the great personalities, Mahajanas, for real advancement in life. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 17.186. A man covered by illusion cannot understand the proper way. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Dharma sthapana hetu sadhura vyavahara. The behavior of a devotee is the criterion for all other behavior. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu followed the devotional principles and taught others to follow them. Right, so what the devotees do, that's actually what religion is. So we see these great personalities. So Madhavendra Puri is acting in a particular way. Lord Chaitanya is saying, that's how then we act. That's how you establish Dharma. Puri Puri Gosaira Ye Acharana Se Dharma Sar. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally followed the behavior of Madhavendra Puri and advised others to follow his principles. Unfortunately, people have been attracted to the material body since time immemorial. Yas yatma bhuti kunape tridatuke swadhin kalatra dishu bhauma ijyadhi yat tirta bhuti salile nakarhichij janeshva bhigyeshu sa eva gokaraha. A human being who identifies this body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers his land of birth worshipable, and who goes to a place of pilgrimage simply to take bath rather than to meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like an ass or a cow. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.84.13. Those who accept the logic of Gadgalika Pravaha and follow in the footsteps of Pseudo Mahajanas are carried away by the waves of Maya. Bhakti Vinod therefore warns, Miche Maya Vase Jato Beshe Kacha Habu Dubu Bhai Jiva Krishna Das Evi Shvas Karle Ta Adar Dukho Nai. Don't be carried away by the waves of Maya. Just surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna, and all miseries will end. Those who follow social customs and behavior forget to follow the path chalked out by the Mahajanas. Thus they are offenders at the feet of the Mahajanas. So that which supports following the Mahajanas, that's useful. That which then takes you away from that, that's not useful. Because you have to judge by the result. The result is developing love for Krishna, not material success. Right? Sometimes they consider such Mahajanas very conservative, or they create their own Mahajanas. In this way, they ignore the principles of the Parampara system. This is a great misfortune for everyone. One does not follow in the footsteps of the real Mahajanas, one's plans for happiness will be frustrated. This is elaborately explained later in Madhya Lila chapter 25, verses 55, 56, and 58. People are so unfortunate they do not accept the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead, they want to be supported by so-called Mahajanas, or authorities. Tate chaya darshana haite tatva nahi jani. We cannot ascertain the real truth simply by following speculators. We have to follow in the footsteps of the Mahajanas in the disciplic succession. Then our attempt will be successful. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Vani, Amritera Dhara. Whatever is spoken by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is an incessant flow of nectar. Whoever accepts his words as reality can understand the essence of the absolute truth. No one can ascertain the absolute truth by following the philosophy of Shankya or the yoga system of Patanjali. For neither the followers of Shankya nor the yogis who follow Patanjali accept Lord Vishnu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nate vidhu svarta gatim hai vishnum. Srimad Bhagavatam 7531. See, so these systems are there as religious systems, but they're not, by their authors, they're not focused on the Supreme Lord.
Yes.
Though they naturally are a support to the process of devotional service.
Yes.
But unless devotional service is the main, and these are the these elements of these that are useful in devotional service, then that it has its balance. But if you follow these and then want to fit devotional service into this, you'll find it a bit more hard to do. Like that.
So now we have a choice.
We have a choice.
Which means if we can follow one of these philosophies connected to devotional service.
Can you follow these philosophies and come to devotional service? Only if you meet devotees. Otherwise, by following yoga and Shankya, you know, or Vaisheshi, any of them, unless you come in contact with the line of pure devotion, they won't take you there. No. Because their goal is not that. None of them, their goal is pure devotional service.
Yeah.
That's why the six systems are there. It's using the various religious processes and philosophies that is given in the Veda, that is for the purpose of bhakti, but they use it for their own purpose.
Yes.
You know, mystic yoga, you know, merging in the absolute, getting rid of material miseries, attaining material success.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what all these philosophies are for.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difficulty, is that unless it's devotional service is the main, and then just like in yoga, means we have yama and niyama, what's favorable for devotional service, what's not. Asana, how we situate ourselves so that it's favorable in performing our service. Then pranayama, engaging our activities in the Lord's service. Pratyahara, drawing the senses in from the sense objects and engaging them in the senses in service to Krishna. Dharana, trying to focus on Krishna and give up maya. You know, dhyana, meditating on Krishna, and samadhi, absorption in Krishna. So you see, bhakti is the origin of this. Now you take that without bhakti, then you get the yoga system.
Yes.
And even in the yoga system, you don't accept the whole Ashtanga yoga. You only take part of it. Then you get Hatha yoga. You get, you know, Raja yoga.
Yes.
You know, it's like Hatha yoga, they just do asanas. There's very little yama niyama. They'll only accept what's good for health or not. In the West, in India, then they'll do so many nice things like that. But still, it's just the postures. You know, it brings peace and all this like that. Now, when you add in the breathing and all that, you get Raja Yoga. You know, and then you add in a little meditation, you get another form. You get these Kriya, this, that. They all have their fancy names, but they're only taking part of the system. You know, and in the West, the yoga studios, now they just take some of the asanas. They stop. They don't do the breathing anymore. They used to do the breathing back, you know, if you go back 20 years or something. But now they stop the breathing. Like that. Maybe it's hard to breathe in those leotards. They're so tight, you know. Maybe.
But the question, you know, the number, the fifth of niyama is Ishvara Pranidhana. And the question Patanjali's motive for using Ishvara Pranidhan on the level of samadhi, what is he referring to? Is he referring to Brahman or is he referring to Ishvara Paramakrishna?
But who's asking the question?
You know, philosophers and yoga masters and yoga teachers and yoga students, because they studied the Yoga Sutra.
Yeah, but what did he say in the second chapter? Because they're talking about the seventh chapter, the end, the samadhi.
They're talking about yam niyam, so there's five and five. So the fifth form of niyama is Ishvara Pranayama, which is samadhi.
Yes, but I'm talking about in the Yoga Sutras themselves.
Right.
So in the seventh chapter, which is the end, he doesn't talk so he talks about the samadhi and the meditation. We see in the second chapter, he's talking about Vishnu as the absolute.
Right.
So the whole point is naturally what's there is you build, it should build on that. So then he would be indicating, that would be what's actually being indicated. But he's writing in such a way for those who don't, since he doesn't emphasize, they can get very distracted. So it's up to you what you want from it. You know, if you're only looking for, you know, a little better digestion so, you know, you can splurge on the weekends, then you know, you may not be so worried about who's the supreme. You know, the supreme becomes, you know, whatever it is with a lot of whipped cream on top and, you know, some chocolate sauce or something. That's supreme. So, therefore, if I do my yoga, then I can eat that. And that guy at that, what do you call it? You know, the food truck that makes those that are so good, he's a Mahajan. Yeah, so, yes.
It's interesting, Maharaj, how all these, not saying all, but prominent yoga masters, in their teachings, they teach one particular way of meditation, of philosophy, everything. But they themselves, in their own private life, they all worship. Mm. They all have an Ishta Devata.
Mm.
And oftentimes, it's like Iyengar and Krishna Namacharya, the use of Vaishnava. But when they teach, they don't teach that one. They teach yoga. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't bring the students towards their own belief.
Mm-hmm. Because if they did, how many would they have?
That's
like
right.
Iyengar yoga, you know, it's an international thing. They can make a demand that you have to study for 7 years.
Yes.
And to get their degree. Then only you can teach if you want to be part of their scene, you know, like that. Would they be able to do that if they were through yoga worshipping Vishnu? No, he'd still be sitting in South India with you know, with a handful of people, and that's it. So it's just a matter of, you know. So that's the point. And so that's the interesting thing about Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas. They couldn't care less about numbers. They absolutely do not care. So they will speak, and like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, nobody's there, you speak to the walls. They'll listen, right? Walls are really tolerant like that. Anything you can speak, they'll be there, they'll listen. They won't give you any, you know, any back talk or anything like that. So their point is you speak the absolute truth. You don't water it down because then you can get more people.
Yeah.
So Hotra Maharaj is making that point that there was an interesting thing in the Western, you know, whole paradigm. You know, in that whole, you know, that kind of Fertile Crescent area, like that, you know, from the Greeks right down to the, what do you call it, Egyptians, that whole scene there. So that originally it was, you know, the Brahmins were, the Kshatriyas, you know, at least the ruling like that, they were the leaders of society and set the standards and everybody else followed. And so that continued, but he said with the Ionians, which are the Greeks, they came with that philosophy of relativity. And so from that, then everything's relative. You know, so it's good depending upon something else, rather than there's a standard. You know, they may have been, at that time in Kali Yuga, it may not have been an absolute standard, you know, by you know, what is recognized in the Veda. But there was the idea that, no, this is the standard and that's it. It's not for discussion. It's just you follow that. It means you can learn it, you can discuss it, you know, how to follow it and appreciate it. But it's not that you don't, there's another option. But with the Ionians, then they brought in, no, there's options. It's whatever, that's where the thing of the people, you want to say?
Well,
The Jains already worked it out, all the different options. So they are the one who are
Jains.
Jainism. They are the ones who are very fond of permutations and combinations.
Oh, okay.
They introduce, I mean, they talk on that.
Speculating on all those things. Yes.
There are so many combination permutation puzzles. They'll never give any conclusions.
Yeah, because shod. It may be this, might be that, you know, sort of. So then it shifted from the Brahmins and Kshatriyas down to the Vaishyas and Shudras. Mm-hmm. At that point, now it was about numbers. Because a bunch of people say this is correct, it becomes correct by that Ionian philosophy. So we see it's kind of like there's that juncture there with Socrates and the rest of society. So he was still there from the last, and then the. So now it's a matter of numbers. If you don't have numbers, you know, people don't look at quality; they look at quantity. You know, like people say, "Oh, there's 2 billion Christians and all that," and you know, so they're way ahead. So we got to follow them. It's like 2 billion what? How many are really serious? How many really says? How many are interested in love for God? You know, as soon as you ask these questions, how many are serious? Take off quite a few zeros. How many are interested in love of God? You can take off more zeros. You know. So then that becomes the problem. So that's a difficulty. At the same time, as if you think in numbers, then you should present the absolute truth in a pure way and try to get the maximum numbers as possible. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, so therefore, you know, that's why I was saying that if we don't build this big temple here, what's the point of you being Westerners where you talk about big and this and that, we do this and we do that, and, you know, so. Like that. No?
Yeah?
For neither the followers of Shakya nor the yogis who follow Patanjali accept Lord Vishnu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The ambition of such people is never fulfilled, for they are attracted by the external energy. Although mental speculators may be renowned all over the world as great authorities, actually they are not. Such leaders are themselves conservative and not at all liberal. However, because liberal means, you know, as we were discussing this morning, is how nicely it you're able to accommodate and what do you call it? What was the exact? Remember? What the liberal was? It was a very...
Mild
natured? But there was something else wrong with it. It was very, very nice. Liberal. Any person who is by nature behaves very mildly is called liberal. Like that. A state by Uddhava after the Shamataka jewel plundering confirms that Krishna is so kind and favorable that if his servitor is accused, even of great offenses, Krishna does not take this into consideration. He simply considers that service that is rendered by his devotees. So that's liberal. So that's the meaning of these great sages that are liberal, because they see someone surrenders, someone's trying, and that they see that is important. Not, you know, they've done something wrong or this or that, like Magrari the hunter. Then Narad Muni then comes along, explains to him what's actually happening here in the way of karma and all that, and, you know, his duties and all that, and then when he sees the thing, he takes up devotional service. It's not that, oh, now he has to, you know, because you did all this, now you have to, you know, purify. No, he just follow devotional service. That's liberal. You know. So then the difficulty comes up is that such leaders are conservative and not at all liberal, because they don't accept anybody else. If there's something good from anybody else, they don't accept it. They only accept for themselves so that they get the followers. You know. The point is, you know, it's whoever is good, that part is good. And whoever and what's not good, that's not. But here it's all, no one's good except us. So then it becomes the thing. They're not liberal, they're conservative, though they claim to be liberal. They'll call themselves liberals, but they don't acknowledge anyone outside of their particular purview. And even within liberals, you know, what's considered liberal, they won't agree either. You know? However, if we preach this philosophy, people will consider Vaishnavas very sectarian. Srila Madhavendra Puri was a real Mahajana. But misguided people cannot distinguish the real form from the unreal. He's a real Mahajan, but people can't discern. That's why Prabhupada talks so strongly. You know, so this kind of move to soften all this and all that to make it more pleasant to those who are not going to take up devotional service, why should we do that? You can say, oh, but they won't accept. They don't accept anyway. You know, just it's nicer presented, you know, pleasantly presented, doesn't say anything that will upset them, but they won't become devotees. And then the people that could become devotees won't become devotees either, because then you don't distinguish truth from illusion. So that's just the way it is, you know. Prabhupada says, the surgeon, he has to cut. You know, you can say, no, he's such a nice surgeon, he doesn't hurt and anything like that. You know, he just comes up and blows on the boil, you know, like that. Such a nice guy. But a person who is awakened to Krishna consciousness can understand the real religious path chalked out by the Lord and his pure devotees. Sri Madhavendra Puri was a real Mahajana because he understood the absolute truth properly and throughout his life behaved like a pure devotee. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approved the method of Sri Madhavendra Puri. Therefore, although from the material point of view the Sanodiya Brahmana was on a lower platform, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered him situated on the highest platform of self-realization, spiritual realization. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.3.20 states that there are 12 Mahajanas. Brahma, Narada, Shambhu, the four Kumaras, Kapila, Manu, Prahlad, Janaka, Bhishma, Bali, Sukadeva, and Yamaraj. To select our Mahajans in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, we have to follow in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his representatives. His next representative is Sri Sarup Damodar Goswami. And the next representatives are the six Goswamis, Sri Rup, Sri Sanatana, Bhatta Raghunath, Sri Jiva, Gopala Bhatta, Dasa Raghunath. A follower of Vishnu Swamis was Sridhar Swami, the most well-known commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam. He was also a Mahajana. Similarly, Chandidas, Vidyapati, and Jayadeva were all Mahajanas. One who tries to imitate the Mahajanas just to become an imitative spiritual master is certainly far away from following in the footsteps of the Mahajanas. Sometimes people cannot actually understand how Mahajana follows other Mahajanas. In this way, people commit offenses and fall from devotional service. So we have that path. You follow that path, you go back to Godhead. That's the thing. So you try to make it very nice, pleasant, present it in a way that people can accept it, but you can't adjust from the absolute. You know, it's just like Prabhu was saying, if they don't like the word religion, but they're comfortable with spiritual, then you talk about spiritual and transcendental, what's not spiritual, you know, like that. And then, but you show them what's real spiritual. You don't leave it at their definition of spiritual, because that for them, spiritual means sitting down and having a moment where you're not thinking about so many stupid things, and, you know, you had that, you know, it was just refreshing, so that was spiritual. But that was just a moment. The senses weren't in the mode of passion, that's all. So something caught your attention that you forgot about everything else. You know, that's what happens. Someone goes out, sees a very nice landscape or something. There's a moment there. They forget about all their problems in their life. They just see that. And that moment, then they consider as spiritual because they forgot all that and they were happy and satisfied in that for that moment. And that will carry them on and then they'll talk about it, you know. So when people are talking about this, no, you have to go out, you have to see, that will be they'll try to imitate that again. But that's they'll call that spiritual. You know, so if there's any moment they forget their regular day-to-day life, we call that a festival. You have a festival, you forget your normal things. You chant, you dance, you take prasad, you know, you don't worry about, you know, what's happening. You know. So, like that. That's the point. So you talk spiritual, but you show them what's real spiritual. And then how the best spiritual position is transcendental. And then how to engage, you know, a material things around you, you know, to bring it to the spiritual platform. And so simply through using that word and showing everything connected to that, you can give them the proper philosophy.
Yes.
But if people then, because they don't want to hear that, then water it all down and all that, then what's the point? You know? Does that make sense? You know, so that's... Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "Dry arguments are inconclusive. A great personality whose opinion does not differ from others is not considered a great sage. Simply by studying the Vedas, which are variegated, one cannot come to the right path by which religious principles are understood. The solid truth of religious principles is hidden in the heart of an unadulterated, self-realized person." Right? So the Vedas are there. By approaching them directly, you won't understand. Because the key to it is, says here, in the heart of an unadulterated, self-realized person. So when you hear from them, now when you look at the Veda, now it makes sense, because now you know how to look at everything. Consequently, as the Shastras confirm, one should accept whatever progressive path the Mahajanas advocate. So what they say, that's what you follow. You make up your own path, God only knows where you're going to end up. Oh, yeah. Because God only knows. You don't know. No one else knows. And, you know, and no one else really cares, right, to know. Footnote 8. This is a verse spoken by Yudhishthira Maharaj in the Mahabharata, Vanaparva, 3:13-117. Yeah. After this discussion, the Brahmana served lunch to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then all the people residing in Mathura came to see the Lord. People came by the hundreds of thousands, and no one could count them. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came out of the house to give audience to the people. When the people assembled, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu raised his arms and said very softly, "Hari Bol." The people responded to the Lord and became ecstatic. As if mad, they began to dance and to vibrate the transcendental sound, Hari. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bathed in the 24 ghats along the banks of the Jamuna. And the Brahmana showed him all the places of pilgrimage. Right? Because he's a local Brahmin there, so he would be able to do all that. But just, he takes care of all these things for this particular lower kind of Vaishya group. You know, if they come, he'd take them around. He does these things. He does the samskars for them. And, you know, that kind of things. Srila Prabhupada, the 24 ghats, bathing places, along the Jamuna are, 1, Avimukha, 2, Adhirudha, 3, Guhya Tirtha, 4, Prayag Tirtha, 5, Kana Kala Tirtha, 6, Tinduka, 7, Surya Tirtha, 8, 8, Vata Swami, 9, Dhruvagat, 10, Rishi Tirtha, 11, Moksha Tirtha, 12, Bodha Tirtha, 13, Gokarna, 14, Krishna Ganga, 15, Vaikuntha, 16, Ashikunda, 17, Chatu Samudrika Kupa, 18, Akrura Tirtha, 19, Yagika Vipra Stana, 20, Kubja Kupa. Isn't that the one when you're going on the parikram? There's that well there, or that's a different kupa? You know the one you go and you say Radhi Shami?
Yeah.
Oh, that's Radhi Shanku.
Huh? Yeah, that's in Vrindavan.
Oh, okay, so these are ones there. Yeah, because she was in Mathura, wasn't she?
Yeah. And also, Akrura Ghat, we know it's towards Mathura.
Okay.
It's near Mathura. That one is after.
Okay, so then they're all along that side. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that side means the Mathura side. 21, Rangastala. 22, Manchastala. 23, Malayudha Stana. And 24, Dashwamedha. Oh, so they also have a Dashwamedha. 217, 191 to 193. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited all the holy places on the banks of the Jamuna, including Swayambhu, Vishramakat, Dirga Vishnu, Bhuteshwara, Mahavidya, and Gokarna. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to see the various forests of Vrindavan, he took the Brahmana with him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the different forests, including Madhuvan, Talavan, Kamudhavan, and Bahulavan. Wherever he went, he took his bath with great ecstatic love. Srila Prabhupada. The word Vana means forest. Vrindavan is the name given to the forest where Srimati Vrindadevi, Tulasi Devi, grows profusely. Actually, it is not a forest as we ordinarily consider a forest, because it is very thick with green vegetation. There are 12 such vanas in Vrindavan. Some are located on the western side of the Jamuna, and others are on the eastern side. The forests situated on the eastern side are Bhadravan, Bilavana, Lauhavana, Bandiravana, and Mahavan. On the western side are Madhuvan, Talavan, Kamudavan, Bahulavan, Kamyavan, Kadiravan, and Vrindavan. These are the 12 forests of the Vrindavan area. So Krishna went to, Lord Chaitanya went around to all these things. 217, 194 to 234. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed through Vrindavan, herds of grazing cows saw him pass and immediately surrounding him began to moo very loudly. Seeing the herds approach him, the Lord was stunned with ecstatic love. The cows then began to lick his body out of great affection. Becoming pacified, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to caress the cows, and the cows, being unable to give up his company, went with him. It was only with great difficulty that the cowherd men were able to keep the cows back. Then, when the Lord chanted, all the deer heard his sweet voice and approached him. When the does and bucks came and saw the Lord's face, they began to lick his body. Not being at all afraid of him, they accompanied him along the path. Bumblebees and birds like the parrot and cuckoo all began to sing loudly in the fifth note, and the peacocks began to dance in front of the Lord. Upon seeing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the trees and creepers of Vrindavan became jubilant. The twigs stood up and they began to shed tears of ecstasy in the form of honey. The tree branches and creepers, overloaded with fruits and flowers, fell down at the lotus feet of the Lord and greeted him with various presentations, as if they were friends. Thus, all the moving and non-moving living entities of Vrindavan became very jubilant to see the Lord. It was as if friends were made happy by seeing another friend. Seeing their affection, the Lord was moved by ecstatic love. He began to sport with them exactly as a friend sports with his friends. Thus, he voluntarily came under the control of his friends. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to embrace each and every tree and creeper. They began to offer their fruits and flowers as if in meditation. The Lord's body was restless, and tears, trembling, and jubilation were manifest. He said very softly, "Chant Krishna, chant Krishna." All moving and non-moving creatures then began to vibrate the transcendental sound of Hare Krishna. That's all right. As if they were echoing the deep sound of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Lord then clasped the necks of the deer and began to cry. There was jubilation manifest in the bodies of the deer, and tears were in their eyes. When a male and female parrot appeared in the branches of a tree, the Lord saw them and wanted to hear them speak. Both parrots flew into the hand of the Lord and began to chant the transcendental qualities of Krishna, and the Lord listened to them. The male parrot sang, "The glorification of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is beneficial to everyone in the universe. His beauty is victorious over the gopis of Vrindavan, and it subdues their patience. His pastimes astound the goddess of fortune, and his bodily strength turns Govardhan Hill into a small toy like a ball. His spotless qualities are unlimited, and his behavior satisfies everyone. Lord Krishna is attractive to everyone. Oh, may our Lord maintain the whole universe." Footnote 9. This verse is found in the Govinda Lilamrita 13:29. Okay, so then we'll hear next time. Next, the female parrot starts to talk. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.